And the last thing I think about too, when I think about building other people who can be leaders on my team or outside of my team, is to take a step back and say, look, every day that you're working is your interview for the next job. So be the person you want to be, act, dress the person you want to be, and think about the characteristics that are important to portray.
Welcome to Beyond the Ledger, real conversations with people driving business forward. I'm Troy Ashby, CPA and host. Each episode, we unpack stories, challenges, and insights from today's top accounting and finance leaders. This podcast is brought to you by my friends over at MarketScale. Welcome back to Beyond the Ledger. Today's guest is Brent Asavamanchai, revenue growth executive for some of the most recognizable brands in the vacation and airline industry, including a recent new brand launch by Southwest called Getaways by Southwest.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. This has been a long time coming. You and I have known each other for maybe longer than we want to admit.
Yeah, that's right. We're young, though.
We definitely are. Before we jump into your career, you really have shaped, companies' names that everybody here is going to know, and you've done it in several different ways. But let's pause for a second and talk about, tell us something that we can't find about you on LinkedIn or searching for Brent.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I think for me, a lot of the growth that's been most important to me, a lot of the improving my skills or growing personally and professionally has been what I call spiral growth. So I had a boss I worked for at a company called Cheap Caribbean, who was the CEO, and he taught me about spiral growth in terms of, hey, you have your core set of responsibilities. So for that time when I worked for him, I was responsible for revenue management and pricing and those kind of things. And then I was asked to take on more responsibility, such as leading the team that responsible for site optimization and analytics. And so spiral growth was about, for me, like 80% of my role was really revenue management. But then I was adding on and spiraling, what you call spiraling out, in terms of learning new things, where I was able to take on that and learn really quickly. And so for me, another example, the same company, where later I was asked to take on separately ancillary products. And I loved it and I learned a ton. But for me, spiraling out isn't really clear on people's resumes, because a lot of times you don't see it in their job titles or even under, whatever they put on LinkedIn. But to me, that's been a really big part of my growth, is just having those opportunities.
So how would somebody, I like this concept, how does somebody pursue that? Is that because you've got a good manager, or is that because of something that you're seeking after?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's both. I think for me, I've had really good managers who identified that I may have skills that could be translatable into those things. And they needed someone at that time to step in, where maybe someone left the company and they say, hey, we know Brent can lead this and he has the aptitude. And so it's been partly that. It's been partly where a lot of times I would ask for those opportunities, and when those things came up, they were given to me because I was doing well in my current role. So yeah, it was very good opportunities for me.
One of the things that you and I talked about, and what we've talked about over the years, is you've had this, I think, a really unique, I've loved watching your career, because three major airlines, vacations, and you've made significant, your group and you as a leader have made significant changes to these companies. Is there something that stands out, or what is that? Because you're a very smart person, right?
But
what
sometimes.
I did go to high school with you, I know, and college. Tell me how you've been able to make such an impact at these large organizations, and how do you navigate that to be seen?
That's a great question. I think for me, it's about relationships, number one. I think, particularly, I'll take Southwest Airlines. When I came into the company, one of the first things I did was identifying a lot of peers who I may not work with them directly every day, and I may not have a lot of projects with them currently, but I started building those relationships. I set up a lot of coffee chats where, hey, we just started building a relationship. And then over time, I started learning from them. They learned from me. And then before I knew it, our role started intertwining, where I was working on similar projects or working on projects we were both on. So for me, it's been about, how do I build those relationships? I think the second thing for me is about trying to broaden my horizons. I know early in my career, and I don't, hopefully none of my people who work for me now hear this, but I know early in my career particularly, I rotated quite a bit. So I had a lot of rotational growth in a good way, where I had, I moved from supply chain management and then into sales and into marketing and then into revenue management. All these are very different functions. And for me, I think getting that broader picture of the business helps me today to work with a lot of those teams a lot better because I understand their roles better. I can relate to them. I can sympathize with them. And it helps me to just have a broader perspective. So I think those two things about relationships and then just trying to build a broader perspective over time with knowledge that's broader than just my current role has been really important to me.
I think there's so much about like who you know, how you treat them, those relationships, especially internally. Is that something that you've got to force yourself to do? Meaning, like, are you an introvert or an extrovert? Is this like against the grain, but you know it's good for the company and for you?
Yeah, I think my natural inclination is just to go in and focus and work really hard, right? Yeah. I'm a really hard type A type of worker, right? But I think I learned over time, I would say I'm an extrovert or introvert, as one of my team called me before, since I was the most extroverted team on a team full of introverts. We're all analytical.
Oh,
right?
Interesting.
But I think for me, I had to make a conscious decision to do it, to go and spend that time to really settle those coffee chats up. Because for me, I'm just focused on work a lot of times. And then I realized, like, if I don't build those relationships, then I'm not going to have those down the road. So it has been something I had to make a conscious decision to do.
An extroverted introvert
is what I was told by my team.
All right. So, but your natural resting place, though, you're an introvert. So you need rest to recover, but you can be an outgoing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I was just trying to define what extrovert, introvert.
I'm probably a mix. Hybrid.
Did you coin that word? I mean, maybe.
No, my team told me that. I don't know. They told me that. So yeah, I would say I need rest, but I do like interacting with people a lot. So yeah. It's a mix. Yeah.
These companies you've worked for, and you pick because you've had, you know, mergers, integrations, you've had new products, you've taken on a lot. You've had a lot of great opportunities. Something stick out to you as something before we'll talk about the Southwest, but I want to save that one for a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm really excited about that one too. But talk about some of these other things and how did you manage through some of this change?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things that I really enjoyed and learned a ton from was when I went through a merger and acquisition opportunity. So I worked for a company called Apple Leisure Group. And at the time for Apple Leisure Group, I was responsible for the revenue management and competitive intelligence for two of the brands, CheapCaribbean.com and Beachbound. And we merged with a company called Mark Travel, who was also another big travel company. And I was asked at the time to take on two of their brands that they had, which was United Airlines Vacations and Southwest Airlines Vacations at the time. And it was really fascinating because I could take a step back and see all these different brands. And what I saw was that every brand had best practices that were unique to them. So whether it be technology, processes, strategy, or people, they all had best practices. I was really lucky because I had the opportunity to then shape that going forward. When I was able to sort of make a catalog of what we need to do and think about the best practices, I was able to take best practices from one brand or a different brand and apply them to all. I was really lucky to have that opportunity. And so we laid out a roadmap of, hey, we're going to take this best practice and roll it out to other brands. For example, Mark Travel, they had really strong best practices in terms of how they handled a lot of their hotel interactions and brought in the hotel inventory and how they managed their hotel merchandising. And then Apple Leisure Group, on the other hand, we had built really good capabilities at how we took in competitive price data, booking data, and then automated that in a way where we could analyze it really quickly without a lot of manual or operational work and then make pricing decisions off of it. And I think back to one situation where I was able to take a lot of those best practices from Apple Leisure Group in terms of automation and so forth and apply them across all the brands. And what I saw was our brand, like we progressed really heavily across our brands because all of a sudden the other brands leveraged this and we made much better decisions. We moved much quicker. But what I also saw was how important it is to think about all these pieces together in terms of technology, processes, people, and strategy. I had an employee who I inherited from the Mark Truffle side. Great employee, had worked at the company for over 20 years. She was really good at operational work. She was really good at sort of manual operational, that kind of type of work. The challenge is that once we automated most of her work and we now asked her to step into a more analytical and strategic role, she struggled, unfortunately, right? And we tried, but you know, at some point we had to let her go and replace her with someone who better fit what we needed. But what it really taught me is that out of M&A and out of these integrations, you know, all these things fit together. And, you know, again, the technology, the process, the strategy, and then the people. And then sometimes you have to either improve the skill sets of those people. And if they can't do that to fit the new environment, then you have to sort of shift what people you have. And so that was a great learning experience for me.
Yeah. And not everybody gets to have that experience.
Yeah, that was great.
And, you know, not that you have to make, never easy to make people changes.
It's hard. It's very difficult.
Especially somebody that you may have been working with for a while. But yeah, opportunity and huge opportunity. So that was mid in your career? Is that?
Yeah, that's probably mid-career.
Yeah.
At point, yeah.
Because you had another opportunity too, or I'm mistaken, in M&A or?
That was probably early in my career, yeah. Okay. I had opportunity early in my career to help M&A between when American Airlines bought Travel, or TWA, back in the day. I'm aging myself. So that was really interesting too, because again, that was a lot of learning about processes and technology and so forth, and sort of just learning from those things and really understanding, like, hey, you can leverage best practices, but you also have to think the big picture of how all the other impacts that are going to happen once you do those kind of things.
Yeah. All right. So going through some of all these, you know, post M&A, change that's coming along, AI is coming along. You've been a leader now for quite a while. Curious to hear kind of your leadership style. And kind of how you keep your team motivated, or how you, you know, retain them, or, you know, all those different things that come along with leadership.
Yeah, absolutely. I think my leadership style is really, how do I lead by example? How do I try to focus on my people and develop them? And how do I try to, you know, build relationships with them over time in a way that's, you know, not too personal, but at the same time, and you want to be personal, but at the same time, how do you find ways where they know they can trust that you have their best interest? And so for me, what I like to do the first couple months someone joins my team or I inherit them or whatnot, is I like to sit down and really have a developmental discussion. And that's not a bad way. It's not like, hey, you're not performing or anything like that. It's really, hey, I want to get to know like what you're looking to do in your career. And if I can understand that better, then it means I can help steer certain projects your way or help focus some of your development in certain ways. Particularly like in leadership. I know for me, when I think of developing leaders or people who want to be leaders on my team or who have the aptitude, one of the things I start small. And if I know they want to be there at that leadership level someday, I like to take a step back and go, okay, well, it starts now, not when that role is posted and you want to move into that role, because I think a lot of people have that perception. And so what I try to do with my teams is start small in terms of, for example, hey, how can we start with giving you projects to manage cross-functionally? And even though those people don't directly report to you, sometimes managing people who don't report to you are actually harder than people who report to you, right? And so, but it helps them build the ability to sort of lead others to a degree. The second thing I do is really help encourage them to take on mentoring relationships if they can. So, for example, at Southwest Airlines, we have a formal mentor program that's really good, where people can sign up to be a mentee or a mentor. And I've had employees who would say, hey, but I don't manage people. I can't be a mentor. And I would say, well, you're more senior than a lot of folks who are wanting to be a mentee and they need someone to help them. And so I encourage them to sign up to those situations, whether they're formal or informal. And I found that that helps them a bit to build some of that confidence and that muscle. And the last thing I think about, too, when I think about building other people who can be leaders on my team or outside of my team, is to take a step back and say, look, every day that you're working is your interview for the next job. So be the person you want to be, act, dress the person you want to be, and think about the characteristics that are important to portray. So being proactive, taking ownership, treating the business as if you're an owner, and then helping others around you if you see that they can be mentored. And so what's important for me is that they understand that wanting to be a leader and getting you there starts today in terms of all these things I just mentioned. But then, you know, your every day and how you work is really your interview for that next step, as opposed to just walking into the interview and saying what you want to say. They're both important. Don't get me wrong. Interviews are important. But if you're not living that every day, then you're going to struggle to really move into a leadership role, and other people will struggle to see you as a leader as they didn't see you act those ways that you're expecting,
right?
As you're trying to expect them to act.
So, all right. So you've brought somebody, a new person's come into your team. You've either hired them or transferred. You have this meeting, which, by the way, is brilliant because you are, you're showing them that you're invested in their career. So that's an immediate, like, okay, this guy's got my back. What does that cadence look like, if there is a cadence? Everybody's got different philosophies on this, right? With folks on your team, whether they're a leader or aspiring leader, to help them keep moving that needle, or is there a cadence, or are they setting things up? What does that look like to Brent?
It looks to me like it's different by each person. So some people, I can feel them out where they're very informal. We can agree on some basic steps to take. So, for example, I may say, hey, sign up to be a mentor. By the way, take this training here that we have. And then also, this sort of topic you're interested in, can you lead this project? And then a lot of people, it's very informal. And then it's really periodically every month, every couple of months, it's just checking in on how you're feeling. Is there something else we can add to help you grow? For me, a lot of the growth is just real projects. Like, how do you handle those and how do you train them in those? So I tend to lean on real work experience as opposed to just a lot of training. Training's great, don't get me wrong, in terms of courses and so forth. But I think the cadence of these different things just depends on the person. Some people I'm very formal with. I say, go write your cadence. Sometimes I have them write a mission statement of, what their mission is in terms of their personal statement, their personal brand statement too. And sometimes that is a piece I layer in because it helps them think about, okay, my personal brand statement is this, and this is who I want to be. And sometimes I take things out of that and go, okay, well, this is what you're saying you want to be. So if you want to be that, then here are the things you can do to get there. So I think it just really depends on the person. Each person is very different to me.
So let's talk about the person that says, hey, I'm aspiring for this job. Here's what I want. And you tell them, well, here's some ideas that I have for you. And then sometimes they don't, you literally meet next time, however long it's been, and they've done none of it. Is that something that are you having some accountability, or do you just kind of let them fail a little bit?
I think it just depends on the person too. Sometimes I let them fail a bit, or I say, well, I try to remind them, like, okay, well, what's your long-term goals? So instead of knocking them hard on it, it's for me, sometimes it's like, okay, well, let's just take a step back. Like, let's remind ourselves, like, where do you want to go? And sometimes the person has shifted. I no longer want to be a leader, or for whatever reason, they don't want to go down that same path, which I've also experienced. And so for me, it's just being flexible by the person and filling them out to see how can I best, every person is very different, how I can influence them the best to see, should we try something different? Is there a different path we want to go? Or can we revisit the same topic? And, and just talking about the same topic again, sometimes can be helpful to remind them where they want to be.
Yeah. Well, and right. Life changes.
Life changes. People change. Yep.
Situations happen, or they thought they wanted and they didn't. That's great. All right. So let's stay down this path with leadership, or you can talk about it as a producer, it's been a long time ago, but like, or as an individual contributor, lessons that you learned along the way, something that, that stuck out with, whether it be somebody like a mistake, if you wanted to own a mistake, or just a leader that has inspired you that kind of puts you down this path.
I had a boss I worked for who, what I really valued about him is he really cared and he tried to understand where you wanted to go with your career. And I think that helped me a lot to be more passionate about my people and where they wanted to go in their career. And he not only did that in a way where he tried to find opportunities for me where or anyone who wanted to grow when he found opportunities that could come up. But I think the other thing I really appreciated about him was direct feedback. And I think there, you know, there's times in your careers, everyone's been through this where, you know, you get direct feedback, or at least I have. I don't know if everyone's been through it. And you get direct feedback and maybe at first you cringe a bit and you're like, ah, that's not true. And then you chew on it for a couple of weeks and then you go, and then you realize he was right. Like I do, you know, do this badly or I could be better at this. And it takes time sometimes to sink in. But I think for me, you know, leadership to me is about both accepting feedback. I often ask my team, what can I do better? I really do want to hear how I can do better because I want to get better. But I do know sometimes, too, it is hard to hear certain things as a leader. Like, you know, you always want to hear you're doing well. But I also do want to hear when I'm not doing well. But the other thing it just reminds me is that my team, if they're going to get better, I have to be honest with them. And sometimes giving feedback that's direct is really difficult. Sometimes it depends on the situation. But if I challenge myself to do that, I see my people improve. It makes me really happy. And I see it as my responsibility to give feedback. You know, you have to be careful how you do it. And everyone's very different how they handle it. But, you know, just being a leader in terms of giving feedback, receiving feedback, and thinking about how you can help other people in their growth to me has been important and things I've learned from some of my best leaders that I've worked for.
In what I do, I see the fact that people aren't giving feedback or they think they've given the right feedback and it's misconstrued happen a lot. Hey, Troy, we need to replace this, you know, VP of finance. And okay, well, how long have they been struggling? Did they see it coming? Oh, no. We're just going to, I'm like, you know, and it's an interesting thing. But we challenge them on it, right? How about we just make sure? Because if you haven't had that conversation, maybe they're not aware. But I think people are naturally, they don't like to give bad news.
Yeah. And I would say it's early in my career, I really struggled with giving that direct feedback. Until I realized that if I wasn't giving it to my people, then they may not be getting it at all.
Yeah.
They may not be growing at all. And I become more comfortable in it. Sometimes it's still difficult, but I think it's taken practice and just remembering that if I don't give it, then I'm sort of doing them a disservice, right?
Yeah. It's an opportunity for growth.
That's right.
And that's all it is. All right. So, you know, when I asked you to be on the show, I was excited about all the things going on at Southwest and, talk to us about how long have you been there now?
3 years.
3 years.
Yeah.
And a lot's happened, but talk to us about this new thing that's launched and can't wait to hear more about it.
Yeah. So Southwest Airlines, we have a vacations product. Historically, we outsourced that to a company called Apple Leisure Group, which I coincidentally work for, right?
Right.
So when I say we outsourced that, let me back up. When I say vacations product, people go, well, what is that? What does that mean? And a vacations product in our eyes and most airlines, when they think about it, is they say if it's just air, that's not a vacation in their eyes or in terms of how they label it. But if you add a car or a hotel, then at that moment it becomes a vacation because you're packaging it with other components and so forth. And for a long decades, Southwest outsourced this, and most recently they outsourced it to Apple Leisure Group. And what Apple Leisure Group would do is they managed everything. So they would contract with the hotels to get all the inventory. They would take our air, and they would package it. They would price it. They would market it. They would send out emails. They had their own website, right? And we at Southwest decided at some point, there's a lot of opportunity there for two reasons. One, you can sort of take out the middleman and improve your profits and so forth. But secondly, you can also manage the customer fully instead of having someone else manage your customer. We can manage that customer ourselves and roll them into our overall sort of customer support and so forth that we have. So I was brought in 3 years ago to Southwest for them to bring their vacations product in-house. And that product's called Getaways. And it's been exciting because my role is very, it's very multifaceted. So revenue strategy, pricing, analytics, but I also get super involved in really helping bring a lot of different pieces together, right? For example, I've managed the booking engine operations, my team does, and we get very involved in a lot of discussions, whether it's user experience of how to improve some of the website. We design a lot of the website functionality or booking engine functionality, different pieces of it, as well as getting involved closely with marketing and developing strategies on personalization and all these kind of things. So I've had the opportunity to really, because we're a startup within a big company, right. It's super cool because you have a lot of these resources around you, but I get to wear a lot of different hats and help influence a lot of different things because we're a startup and you have to wear a lot of different hats, right? And so it's been one of the most rewarding experiences working with a lot of great people around me and having a lot of great people on my team and being able to really influence and design a lot of things from scratch to the point now we just launched in August and we're doing really well. So I'd love to grow the business more, obviously, but it's been a great rollout and I've had the opportunity to work with a lot of great teams across the entire company. So it's been great.
So let's double click on the building phase, the startup under a big company, you know, the resources, but 3 years.
Yeah, three years.
And there's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot to get done, a lot of ambiguity, processes to set up. Were you prepared for it?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
I think I'd run these businesses before, but I think there are a lot of things that I didn't fully understand going into it. And I think, you know, anytime you build a new business like this out, particularly something this complex, there's a lot of things we learned along the way. And I think I've been told by some of the technology folks I worked with that this is one of the more complex builds that they had. So I think we had a lot of pivots along the way. We had a lot of things along the way where we said, okay, we probably need to change that up or add something that we didn't realize that was going to have to come up. But, you know, it's a startup. So you just sort of pivot and do your best. And then I think some of the most important things is really, you know, helping your team see the long-term vision, because 3 years is a long time to build this. And I think some of the things that were most important to us was helping people see the long-term vision, the why of what you're doing, because once people see the why, they can get behind it better. And then to also realize that a lot of people that you're working with, particularly in a big company like Southwest, they have their day jobs, right? Like they're helping you on this side project, but they also have all these other responsibilities. So helping them see the big picture and then also helping them when there's quick wins along the way, helping them see the quick wins, like, or when I say quick wins, helping them see the progress you're making by calling out different milestones. I think those are super important things that helped us just sort of maintain momentum as we went along.
Those milestones, breaking it down, right?
Yep.
Did your post M&A help with, I mean, you've it's funny because it's like this job is perfectly made for you,
yeah,
considering
that's right.
Apple Leisure, but it seems like to your point, what did you call it?
Spiral growth.
You've been like weaving this the whole time. Not you knew this job was coming up, but
yeah. Besides the fact that my boss is the greatest, I'm kidding. Phil is terrific, but besides having a great boss who helped us keep us sort of aligned, I think the other things that did help me is, you know, I've had this broad experience through spiral growth and so forth and rotational growth through different roles. So, you know, the having managed site optimization for company before, having managed revenue management, marketing, I've redesigned booking engines with my old company, you know, having been involved in marketing and doing email marketing strategy, all these things helped me to work better with others. And when we rolled out, because I had to get involved in a lot of different things to help support or to help guide, or where we had, sometimes we had gaps where as a startup, you know, you have to wear a lot of different hats. And so you're getting involved in a lot of different things. And then I think too, as a startup, you know, you don't hire for every single function because, you know, you're a startup, you have to manage, you're building in a very thin environment where you're having to forcibly do a lot of different things that you wouldn't normally get involved in. So yeah, the spiral growth is super for me.
All right. So I have one last question before I let you get out of here, but you've had an amazingly successful career and you know, people are going to look at this and say, you know, well, he works for these major airlines. He's done all these things, but absent spiral growth, what is something that you would tell somebody 5-10 years ago to kind of help them be more successful?
I think for me, personal life, I think I've known you for a while, and you know, I was single until I was 41 years old. As I love to tell this joke, my wife doesn't like it, but I love to tell this joke, that no woman was desperate enough to marry me until I was 41. And so, but what that tells me is that I worked a lot of hours, you know, my career. I'm a hard worker, but I would, you know, in the past 5 years, as you know, I've had a 2 daughters, a 4-year-old and a 3-year-old, and I don't do the best. I'm not the best about work-life balance yet, right? I need to get better. I know the last 6 months have been really difficult with a lot of the product launch we've had. But for me, taking a step back, that's been the thing that's really kept me going. It made me happier. It made me more productive. It's just having a family life that I really was really happy with, right? You know, getting married and then having 2 daughters pretty quickly has just been the best thing ever. So the advice I would give to someone is have that work-life balance, have some whatever balance people want. Some people don't want families, that's fine, but make sure you have that balance of something in your life that's much, much larger than just work.
Yeah.
That's for me.
I hear it a lot, right?
Yeah.
And it's interesting because it's the only regret that some people end up even going to their grave with is not spending enough time with family. But then you look at somebody that's been so successful and you're like, but you just told us that you worked hard and now look where you got.
Yeah.
But I get it, right? Try to find a way to balance because there's always going to be work.
That's right.
That's right.
That's exactly right.
Brent, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your story. We'll drop Southwest Getaways, Getaways by Southwest.
Getaways by Southwest.
Where we'll put that in the show notes and have people go check it out.
All right. Thank you very much, Troy. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
I'm Troy Ashby. And remember, people are more than their titles and companies are more than their balance sheets. Follow Beyond the Ledger so you never miss an episode.